My name is Rhonda, and I am on the teaching team, and I am so excited to share with you what I feel like God has really given to me, and I hope you'll be encouraged. I enjoy words and definitions. I am a pretty decent Scrabble player, I must admit. And next to my bedside table, I have an iPad that always has an ongoing Scrabble game where I'm playing against the computer. I have two daughters, and our youngest daughter is now 8. But when she was 4, we showed her and her sister one of the Charlie Brown movies. Now, I didn't remember this, but almost every character calls Charlie Brown stupid. Again and again, "You're stupid, Charlie Brown. Charlie Brown, you're so stupid." You hear it again and again. Well, my 4-year-old hadn't heard this word, and she thought it was a great word. So she proceeded to call everyone in her world stupid. And we honestly had a really challenging time breaking her of this habit. But I knew we were on the right track when she looked at her sister Grace and said, "Grace, you're stupid." And she looked at me and she said, "Mommy, you're stupendous." Stupendous! Are you kidding me? That was genius wordplay. I loved that. She is a girl after my own heart. And so I love words and definitions. And not surprisingly, the Merriam-Webster Dictionary is one of my most visited websites. So I'm delighted whenever our Bible study asks us to look up a definition like it did this week, where we looked up the word faithful. So what did we find when we looked up the word faithful? The most basic meaning of the word faithful is one who keeps their promises. You see, it is not just enough for you to know that God is faithful. That's just a word. You need to know what the word means. What does it mean that God is faithful? What does faithful mean? If someone keeps their promises, they can be trusted. Since God keeps his promises, he can be trusted. That is our key truth for today. Because God is faithful, you can trust him, even when it does not make sense. Because God is faithful, you can trust him, even when it does not make sense. Our God is faithful, and he is faithful in two ways. If you're a note taker, here's your outline. Two ways God is faithful, and three ways we can respond. Two ways God is faithful, and three ways we can respond. First, let's look at God is faithful in his promises. God is faithful in his promises. He can be trusted. Our lesson this week included the amazing story of Abraham and his wife Sarah. I love the stories in the Bible. I especially love Bible stories when they're about women. As we read in this week's lesson, God gave a promise to Abraham and Sarah that they would have a baby. Really? Sarah would give birth to a child at 90 years old? That's incredible. A 90-year-old first-time mama. And what did we see? God promised, and he was faithful to his promise. Sarah did give birth to a baby. A promise made and a promise faithfully fulfilled. God keeps his promises. You can trust him. God is faithful. But let's be honest here. This promise doesn't make any sense. I went digging a bit, and I found some further explanation. Romans 4:19 says, "Abraham figured his body was as good as dead, and so was Sarah's womb." Now, this is reality. I think this verse is so humorous. Her womb was as good as dead. This promise does not make sense. We know how biology works. As women, we know about periods and cycles and ovulation. We know about menopause. Menopause is when a woman's body presses the pause button. Baby making is over. It is done. That's what this verse means. Sarah's womb was dead. She was no longer ovulating. Her uterus was no longer a place for growing babies. God's promise to this couple makes no sense. But let's go back to our key truth. Because God is faithful, you can trust God even when it does not make sense. God's promise didn't make any sense. Read any book about human reproduction, and you will see that this story makes no sense. But God did it. An amazing miracle. A very cool story. But let's talk about our reality. I personally have never received a promise like he gave Sarah. The story of Sarah is remarkable. It is amazing. We read it and think, wow, that is incredible. But then our next thought might be, but God hasn't given me a specific promise. God, it sure would be a lot easier if you gave me a specific promise, and then I would have something to hold on to, right? Sometimes we think, God, I could trust you a lot more if you would just give me a promise. What do we do then? Anybody here in that place? Anyone here trying to persevere, but you don't have direction? You don't have a specific promise? That can be a hard place to be. So what do? Because the truth is, a lot of times God does not give a personal promise. But that's when we need to look at the second part of God's faithfulness. God is faithful in his character. God is faithful in his character. This is a meaningful study that we're having this year, learning about the character of God, understanding his attributes, the nature of God, the temperament of God, who he is. As I was preparing for today, I asked myself, at the end of the year, what do I want everyone in our study to remember? If there's just one thing that you could take away, one thing to remember for the whole year, what would it be? The answer for me is how God describes himself. In these two verses, as God is describing himself, you don't realize at the time how significant it is because it's told in a bigger narrative. It's told in the context of Moses and the Ten Commandments, so it almost gets lost as a side story. But these two verses are not a side story. These two verses are the story. These verses are God using words to describe himself. This is what I would love all of us to take away from this year. Exodus 34, 6 through 7. This is how God describes himself. As he passed in front of Moses proclaiming, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands and forgiving wickedness, rebellion, and sin. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. This is how God describes himself. And here's what makes it even more significant. These two verses are the most requoted verses within the Bible itself. So if all the words of the Bible are important, the words most requoted by the Bible in the Bible must be really important. These words are God's character. These words are how God describes himself. These words are who he is. These are the character traits you can trust. In these words, we see God's character traits, many of which we've already studied, some of which are still to come. Love, grace, mercy, justice, judgment, patience, and today's word, faithfulness. I want you to see faithful is one of the words God uses to describe himself. He is faithful. He says so himself. God is faithful when he keeps a promise in his word, but sometimes there is no specific promise to hold on to. Sometimes there is silence. How can we know God's faithfulness then? Trust his character. Does this ring true for you? Are you in a season where the answer is not clear, where it feels like God is not speaking? focus on his character. Even in the silence, you can trust his character. Focusing on God's character can be an encouragement and a faith builder. God is faithful to his character. And because God is faithful, you can trust God even when it does not make sense. So we've looked at two ways that God is faithful, in his promises and in his character. Now let's look at three ways we can respond to God's faithfulness. The first is be confident. The second one is be careful. Now, that might sound a bit surprising, but we're going to work through this one. The second one is be careful, and the third one is be conscious. Be conscious. So let's first look at how we can be confident in God's faithfulness. About 10 years ago, I was teaching a class, and we were doing a book study on prayer. And in the class, we studied Psalm 13. Let's take a look at Psalm 13. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? How long shall the enemy be exalted over me? Consider and answer me, O Lord my God. Light up my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death. Lest my enemy say, I have prevailed over him. Lest my foes rejoice because I am shaken. But I have trusted in your steadfast love. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me. It's a short psalm, only 6 verses. But did you hear the first part of this psalm? Listen to the first part again. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? I would like to make a side comment here. The book of Psalms makes it very clear that every emotion we have is valid. Every emotion you have can be shared with God. The good, the bad, the ugly. He wants all of you. You don't have to clean yourself up to come to God. He wants you as you are. Did you hear the pain in the psalmist's words? The author says, how long, 4 times. How long? How long? How long? How long? Do you hear the time passing with no answer? It's almost painful to hear. If this was you saying these words, it would be painful. As a friend or family member, it would be difficult to watch you going through this pain for so long. The delay, the answer is not coming. But look at verse 5. But I have trusted in your steadfast love. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me. You see, in the opening of the psalm, there is frustration and confusion because God appears to not be responding. The psalmist is saying, hello, I am here and you are not. What is going on? But at the end of the psalm, the writer is trusting in the Lord. The writer has confidence in the Lord. After the class had finished, everyone was heading into the service in the sanctuary, and a man that had been in the class came up to me and asked me about the psalm. He asked me a really insightful question. He asked me, how much time do you think passed before the first verse and the last verse? I understood immediately what he was asking because I knew this guy was going through a hard time. I knew this question wasn't just a random question. This question was coming from a place of personal questioning and pain. When the author wrote this psalm, how long did it take for his heart to go from verse 1 to verse 5, to go from how long to I have trusted in the Lord? From agitation to trust, from turmoil to belief, from frustration to faith. I responded to my friend, I don't know. But I will bet it probably took a lot longer than it takes to read the psalm. You see, sometimes it is hard to trust God. Sometimes the answers don't come quickly, right? We want the answers, we're waiting for the answers, but they feel slow in coming. How is it going for you? Is there somewhere in your life where God doesn't seem to be moving, where he doesn't seem to be answering? Friends, you can be confident in him. You can trust him. You can trust him when the answer takes longer than you think it will. When the answer takes longer than you think it should. When the answer takes longer than feels fair. You can believe in our faithful God. That is why I love the Bible story found in the book of Mark, where a desperate father brings his son to Jesus. The son has an evil spirit in him, and the father is overwhelmed, and he begs Jesus for help. Jesus tells the dad, believe. And here's my favorite part of the story in Mark 9:24. Immediately, the father of the child cried out, I believe. Help my unbelief. Ladies, this is a valid prayer. This is a valid prayer. I believe. Help my unbelief. Sometimes God's answers are quick, but often they are not. But because God is faithful, you can trust God even when it does not make sense. Even when there is a delay, even when there appears to be no hope, even when the time is dragging on, days are passing, weeks are passing, maybe even years are passing, you can still be confident in the faithfulness of God. So we have looked at the fact that we can be confident because God is faithful. Now let's look at the fact that we need to be careful. My husband and I adopted two wonderful girls, but prior to that, we endured 14 years of infertility. I knew there was a reason I liked the story of Sarah. She is kind of a kindred spirit to me. 14 years is a long time. I wasn't 90 years old, but it was a long time. And in that time, we had a number of failed adoptions and medical disappointments trying to become pregnant. It was difficult, to say the least. But then you add to that family, friends, and people at church. After so many years, people just do not know what to say. 14 years. I cannot tell you how many times I was told, you will have a baby because God knows the desire of your heart. I recently told this to a professor of mine, and he said, ugh. When a theology professor says, ugh, you know that's not the right interpretation. The well-meaning people who said this to me were speaking of Psalm 37:4. Let's look at that. It says, delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Now that is a beautiful promise. The problem is when we interpret the desire of our heart to be whatever we want. God will give you the desire of your heart so you will have, fill in the blank. You will have a baby because God will give you the desires of your heart. You will have a husband because God will give you the desires of your heart. You will have a house. You will have a great job. You will have an amazing vacation. You will have, just fill in the blank. Is the desire of my heart anything I want? What does the word heart mean? The word heart in the Old Testament means the deepest level of a person. In fact, it is so deep that only God fully knows it. Did you hear that? Only God truly knows the desire of your heart. I know people said that because they wanted to say something encouraging and be hopeful. They said it because they wanted it to be true. They were trying to be nice and kind, and they just wanted us, for goodness sake, to have a happy ending after 14 years. But the first part of their sentence and the second part of their sentence didn't go together. God never gave me the promise that he gave Sarah. He never promised me a baby from my womb. These well-meaning people had no idea what the desire of my heart was. But God did. And that is why I have two little people that I have. They're not from my womb, but they are from my heart. God alone knows the desire of your heart. God alone. You can trust him, not because he will give you everything you want. You can trust him because he knows the desire of your heart more than you know the desire of your heart. Next to Psalm 37:4, I would love to put this verse, this promise, Ephesians 3:20. Now to him who is able to do far more abundantly than all we can ask or think, according to the power at work within us. God made your heart. He knows the desire of your heart more than you know the desire of your heart. And to tell you the truth, his desire for you is more than you can even ask or think. He is faithful. And remember, because God is faithful, you can trust him even when it does not make sense. So we need to be careful. Sometimes we do it. Sometimes it's the people around us who want the best for us. But we can't create our own promise from God. This is dangerous. It is dangerous to twist God's word and make it say something that it doesn't really say. We need to be careful. So there are three ways to respond to God's faithfulness. Be confident, be careful. Now let's talk about the last one, be conscious. Of course, because I am who I am, I had to go to the dictionary. I went to my favorite website and found the definition of the word conscious. It means to perceive, to observe, to notice, to be aware of. So the last way we can respond to God's faithfulness is to be conscious of his faithfulness. Observe his faithfulness. Notice it. Be aware of it. Be conscious of his faithfulness. On the introduction page of this week's lesson in our Bible study, page 145, is the wonderful hymn of the church, which we just sang, Great is Thy Faithfulness. It is listed as the meditation. This well-loved hymn is based on Lamentations 3:22 through 23. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. Also shown on that page is the author of the song, Thomas Obadiah Chisholm. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Thomas Chisholm. Thomas Chisholm became a Christian when he was 27 years old, and he wrote this song, Great is Thy Faithfulness, when he was 57 years old. Years later, when asked about the lyric, he said it was simply a morning-by-morning realization of God's personal faithfulness. Here's a question for you. What do you think Thomas Chisholm, the writer of Great is Thy Faithfulness, did for a living? What was his occupation? What would you think the writer of this great and beloved hymn did for a living? Did he have an influential position? Was he a best-selling author? Was he a professor at a university? What was Thomas Chisholm's job? The writer of Great is Thy Faithfulness was an insurance salesman. He sold insurance. That seems pretty ordinary, doesn't it? Nothing fancy or particularly impressive, really. He was not a wealthy man, and he suffered poor health, but he felt richly blessed by God's daily mercies. In a letter, Chisholm wrote, "My income has not been large at any time due to impoverished health in the earlier years, which has followed me on until now. Although I must not fail to record here the unfailing faithfulness of a covenant-keeping God, and that he has given me many wonderful displays of his providing care, for which I am filled with astonishing gratefulness." Did you hear how he described God? He described him as covenant-keeping, a promise-keeping God. God keeps his promises. That's what faithfulness is. What about you? Are you conscious of God's faithfulness? Are you noticing God's faithfulness? As the hymn states, "Morning by morning, new mercies I see. Morning by morning, day by day, looking for God's mercies, looking for his faithfulness." Since we know the Lord is faithful, there must be evidence of his faithfulness. I have a prayer that I use regularly during hard times. The prayer is, "Lord, help me see the good." Really, what I'm saying is, help me see your mercies. Help me see your faithfulness. Help me see where you are working in my life, in my husband's life, in my children's life, in my friend's life, that I may not be noticing. But in order to see them every day, you have to look for them every day. Maybe that is something you would like to start, looking for God's mercies, morning by morning, day by day. One way to do this is the spiritual discipline of journaling. Now, I'm going to tell you right up front, I am not a typical journaler. This is not easy for me. Oh, how I wish I had been keeping a journal, but it's not me. But I will tell you something I do like to do. I like to look for what I call the hand of God. When I look back and I see the connections that God has made, things that never would have happened if God had not been involved, I love looking for that. I love making those connections. Anybody who knows me knows that I love to do that. It is so good for my soul, for my faith, for my trust in the Lord. Let me give you an example. On Sunday nights here at the church, we have an evening service, but we also have dinner. There are tables on the side, and after the service, you go through the line, get your dinner, and sit down at the table to eat. So about a year ago, I was out of town, and my husband was at the evening service with our two daughters. So what do you do when you sit at a table with people you've never met? You introduce yourself. So my husband said, "Hi, I'm Kevin, and these are my daughters, Grace and Hope." And they go around the table, and everyone introduces themselves. Well, my then 7-year-old daughter, Hope, whispers in Kevin's ear, "Tell them about mommy." Now, I'm not there. There's no reason to talk about me. He says to her, "No, it's fine. She's not here." Hope repeatedly says into Kevin's ear, "Tell them about mommy." "No, it's fine, honey. There's no need." Now, if there's one personality trait that my daughter Hope has, it's that she perseveres. She is actually quite remarkable in this character trait. But she will not let up. And she insists in a whisper, "Tell them about mommy." Now, Kevin, being a very bright man, can tell she is not going to let this go. So he says to the table, "My daughter wants me to tell you about my wife. She's not here tonight. She's out of town. She goes to school full-time and is working toward a degree that will allow her to become a hospital or hospice chaplain." A guy at the table pipes up, "Oh, I have a friend who has a wife who is a hospice chaplain. If your wife would ever want to meet with her, I'd be happy to give you my friend's name." this is my daughter. This is my, no, this is me. This is me. I'm not at the event. This is my daughter. This is my husband. This is the man at the table who he has just met. This is the man who is not at the table, but is this man's friend. And this is this man's wife. Do you see this? Some would call that 6 degrees of separation. I never would have met this woman. Through this complicated line, I ended up meeting this woman for coffee, and she was remarkable. We had a great conversation, and guess what? I just so happened needed to interview someone who has a job that I'm interested in doing sometime for a paper in a class that I was in. I can tell you this for certain. There is no way our paths would have crossed on their own. We don't have any common crossing points in our life. I call that the hand of God. And when I look at that experience and I put all the dots together and how God connected them, I say, Lord, you are the only one that could have made this happen. Thank you for making that happen. I call that the hand of God. Now, those kinds of things don't happen every day. But do you know what? You're going to see a glimpse into my soul right here. When those things happen and I see the hand of God, I feel like God is saying to me, I know where you are. I know where you are. Just keep doing what you're doing. You have no idea what it means to me when I put those pieces together and I see God's hand. But here is the thing. You have to have eyes to see. And when you have eyes to see, you will see his faithfulness. As the song says, morning by morning. Spiritual practices that draw you closer to God are called spiritual disciplines. There are many: prayer, worship, serving, stewardship, just to name a few. And journaling can be a spiritual discipline, not just a diary. But when you use what you write to draw you closer to the Lord. If this is interesting to you, there's a book I recommend called Spiritual Disciplines for the Christian Life. It's by Donald Whitney. It's up there on the screen. One of his chapters is on journaling. He talks about a number of different ways to use journaling, but the idea that connects with me is using journaling to help you remember the Lord's works. Journaling is one way to help you be conscious of God's faithfulness, morning by morning. Today we've looked at three ways to respond to God's faithfulness. Be confident, be careful, be conscious. We've looked at two ways God himself is faithful, in his promises and in his character. And we have one key truth. Because God is faithful, you can trust him even when it does not make sense. Let's pray. There you go again, God. You're faithful once again. Thank you for this rich character trait. Thank you for who you are morning by morning. Help us, Lord, to see that you are faithful to your promises. Help us to cling to the fact that you are faithful in your character. Thank you for the gift of learning about your character. Now help us, Lord, help us to respond to your faithfulness. Help us to respond to your faithfulness in whatever way you direct our hearts. And Lord, may we be quick to give you praise, Lord, for every good thing. We love you. Amen.